serving veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes, visiting today with Purple Heart recipient Roger Bain of Las Vegas, Nevada, a native of Rhinelander, Wisconsin. He survived World War II in Europe with the 30th Infantry Division.
Now, I believe when I asked you earlier how many times you were wounded, you said 2 times.
Yeah.
So what was the other one?
Just a minor wound, just a little scratch, I call it. Didn't draw much blood.
Well, and that's the thing. And I've talked to a lot of guys, and they take the same approach. They don't want to draw attention to it or make a big deal. But a minor scratch to you is probably pretty significant to a lot of people listening.
Well, yeah. Well, you know, some guys got banged up and patched. Went to the medics and got a little patch on. And then after the war, then they said, well, for this and that, you get so many points towards going home.
Right.
Guy said, "Darn, I should have turned this in."
Yeah, and I've had a lot of guys share that one of the reasons they didn't turn some things in is because they knew how much worse others had it.
That's true.
And you probably saw a lot of that.
Yeah, and deprive other guys of more attention.
What was the hardest thing for you to deal with over there?
I don't know. Well, what can you say? You're 20 years old. Every day goes by. You're always looking for something. Something to eat or find a figure way to scratch out your food. I think if we had to count all the sea ration cans that was thrown out and over France, it'd be a hell of a pile. You can see where we went. Sea rations and K rations.
And you grew up in northern Wisconsin, which is plenty of cold and plenty of snow.
Yeah.
But what perspective did that give you on the weather during the Battle of the Bulge?
Well, I knew it. So I had 2 pair of stockings on, 2 pair of pants, 2 field jackets, and I had gloves on. I know how to keep myself warm. Oh, I was cold a lot of times. You know, you're standing or laying in a foxhole days at a time, every day, you're never inside. Mm-hmm. Once in a while, you get inside.
Would you say it was about the same as northern Wisconsin, or was it worse?
I don't think it's any worse. We had 40-degree weather up there, too, you know.
Yeah, 40 below. But the deer and the rabbits and the partridges never shot back at you?
No, never shot back. I got hit once with a shotgun. A shot guy shot me with a shotgun.
You mean back home in Wisconsin?
Yeah, I was hunting. He seen a rabbit. I didn't, I guess he said. he shot at the rabbit, so it hit me. Not bad. Stung.
I imagine so.
Northern Wisconsin is, we're up in the woods. It's all woods. It was a logging country. It's like wilderness country.
So if you're in the Ardennes Forest, it's not all that different.
No. You go into Germany, we go to the wooded areas. I know what that was like. And the Belch had lots of woods. We had lots of woods. It didn't bother me.
Well, a couple other things that come to mind. You know, there are a couple things that you went through that for anybody in peacetime America, it's one thing, but you experienced in a very different situation. And I'm thinking about Christmas 1944 during the Battle of the Bulge. That must have felt a little different than a Christmas back home. You remember anything about that Christmas?
Yeah, bombed us.
German bombers dropped a few presents for you?
No, American bombers.
Your own bombers.
Yeah, medium bombers.
Because you were so close to the German lines.
It was in Melbourne. I think they made a mistake. Why don't you ask me about New Year's?
Yeah, I want to hear about that too, but tell me about Christmas. So American bombers are dropping bombs at your position.
They damaged the tower a little bit.
But they didn't kill any of your guys?
I don't think so.
Uh-huh.
Because I was on this hill and this steep bank going down, and the bomb lit on the bottom of that hill. And I was looking up at him. And I could see this thing go by. My eyes, bomb went off down the bottom of the hill.
Wow.
And I'm like right back into my foxhole.
I'm sure I'd do the same thing. When it's Christmas Day and you're half a world away from home, freezing your tail off in combat, do you think of your mom and dad and your sister back home, or what occupies your mind?
Well, it's cold, miserable. I can't think of anything we got to eat special. Nothing special.
Mm-hmm. But you said, ask me about New Year's. What happened there?
Big fiasco. New Year's Eve, we went on patrol. Bright moonlight night. 2 platoon sergeants were scouts. 2 platoon sergeants for next. Then it was me. up in the front. Then I finds out that we got to take, they took 40 men, picked the men out of the company. Well, I says, it'll be a pretty good thing here. And a section of light machine guns. I says, wait a minute, what's going on? I said, well, we're going to go on a raiding party. We're going to back come several miles back and pick up some German officer. He said, oh, that ain't bad. And he said, well, yeah, we're bringing out some litter bearers along, too. Ho, ho, I says, this is going to get kind of bad. So off we went, dark, it's a moonlight. And we was going along, and we got stopped. I laid down in the snow, and some German shot his rifle off right in my ear. I says, holy crap. And I kind of edged back, then the snow went under my field jacket. And two guides come back, we're looking for him. I couldn't see him. Oh, where the hell is he? I think he got up and run, hid, took off. Okay, so I started out again. We come to a hedgerow there, and four of us got across, and two Germans come walking up the trail. And a friend of mine, they called halt, and they turn around and run. So here, two guys run after to capture them. They've got to take them back. You know, they got them to go back.
Right.
But they got away. So we went a little ways, and two guys says, get late. I said to me, he says, you take that BR and run off a few rounds. And I said, oh, no. Oh, yeah. The guy said, well, this is getting too late.
And you said no because you would have been making yourself a target.
No, making a lot of noise.
Uh-huh.
I wanted peace and quiet. No, I said, I ain't going to shoot. And they said, yeah, I guess you're right. The lead turned around and everybody turned around behind it. Didn't. They went out back first and they just looped around and got back at daylight. The only shot was fired where I was. And they said, well, tomorrow night we're going out again. Oh, I says, God, Jake, this is terrible. Snowstorm come up and a big snowflakes come down and they called it off.
And you weren't disappointed one bit?
Not one bit.
So when you're talking about the German firing right next to you, so, I mean, he was close enough that he could have killed you if he saw you?
If he was shooting at me or somebody behind me, he didn't hit nobody.
Uh-huh. But he was awfully close.
Yeah, he's right there. I mean, he was close. And I couldn't, I was kind of down low and I couldn't see him. And, of course, it's wooded.
Yeah. I mean, just hearing you describe it, it sounds like a situation where every nerve in your body is on edge.
Oh, yeah. I said, where the hell is he, you know? What a fiasco that was.
Sounds like you were fortunate to come back alive from that.
Oh, yeah. 13 days later, the war really took place. And
well, the other day I was curious about, just because of the uniqueness of where you were and how you experienced it, come April of 45, the end of the war is getting close. You had your birthday over there.
Just another day.
Did you even recognize when your birthday came around?
I don't think I ever recognized my birthday.
Those things don't matter quite as much when it's life and death.
You didn't have no calendar.
You know, I'm curious, when you describe that patrol and some of these other situations you're in, was there something that you look back on now, you say, I survived because of this, or I was able to handle it and endure what I went through because of XYZ? Were there some things that helped you get through it?
Yeah, I think it's luck. It's all luck. I had so many close calls that, like in Germany, I was taking this town, this long, narrow town. It took us a couple of days to take it. I went upstairs on this brick house, and this nice glass cupboard, and I looked at it, and I said, shall I smash it? And I said, no, it's a pretty nice piece of furniture. But any time this guy looked out the window down the street, looked down the street, and he went downstairs. And I left, and I just stepped in the other room, and that German tanker, see that? The guy looked out the window, and he shot that into that building where that nice cupboard was. Blew it across the room and smashed it all to pieces. And that just that second, I stepped into the other room.
Wow.
Missed me. If I'd been sitting there looking at that, it'd done me in.
And I'm looking at some pictures of some people who wouldn't have been born if you had lingered.
Yeah.
Hey, what about VE Day? When you heard the Germans had surrendered, was that a big deal? Did that mean something to you?
Well, I'm glad it's over with. We could quit.
Yeah.
Of course, then we went into police action. You know, we went all spread out and went, I think I went to Rotary, Germany. And that's the first time we lowered the flag. The our company. And I had this Sergeant Strasburg. We folded the flag when it come down. That was the first time in my life ever done that. Kind of got to me.
What it represented?
But I was just a kid. But it kind of got to me at the time. Mm-hmm. Never thought much of it. But we hung out down there. We went into Camp Lucky Strike, Tent City.
That whole time you were over there fighting this German army, were you ever aware of the concentration camps and the conditions that these Jews and other political prisoners?
Oh, yeah. I seen the people. I never got into the camps, but I was seen the people.
You saw some of those who'd been liberated?
Yeah.
What did they look like?
Pretty sorry-looking people.
You could tell they'd been starving?
Oh, yeah. There was nothing but skin and bones. 3-4 of us guys took a train back of displaced persons. Mm-hmm. And so put them in boxcars into France.
So that gave you a picture of the impact of what you'd done over there.
Yeah, how you could treat people the way they did.
Well, I don't want to leave anything out that's important to you. I also don't want to forget to say thank you. Thank you for serving our country. Thank you for helping us understand a little bit of it. I know that you had an experience more recently with Honor Flight of Southern Nevada. You and your daughter, who lives down the street, got to go with a bunch of other veterans to Washington, D.C. To see the World War II Memorial and other sites there. What was that like? What did you get out of it?
Quite an experience. We all had to go in wheelchairs, see?
Mm-hmm.
So we come to the First World War Memorial. It was off to the side. I got out of a wheelchair and walked up some steps, and I walked over to be in the center. I could look right down on the Washington Monument and everything.
Yeah.
Lake, that. Right there, I could see another guy marched back and forth, the guard.
Oh, at Arlington National Cemetery, you mean?
Yeah. I watched him. Spit and polish, boy. I tell you, he'd march back and forth, make the turns. Then he changed the guard for us.
Mm-hmm.
And the sergeant come out, and he says, "I want complete silence, all the people." Nothing was said. Well, I thought of my dad. That's a memorial for him, you know. But it was fun. And, of course, I'm standing there, and here come two people down each side of me. They come with our people that are taking care of us. Stood inside of me. So I wouldn't fall. But I was in pretty good shape at the time.
But the emotions that you're feeling right now, thinking back on that moment at the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier, you were feeling those emotions then?
Yeah, for my dad.
And that your dad could have been the unknown soldier. You could have been the unknown soldier.
Yeah. But he was, you know, those fellas, you know. We had a lot of them, too, you know, a lot of men.
Well, yeah.
Battle of the Bulge, I think 16,000 men was killed.
Well, and in the whole war, 406,000 Americans. And I don't want to suggest anything or put thoughts in your head, but I'm just curious if during that time at the World War II Memorial, when you realize that that wall there is honoring 406,000 guys like you who didn't get to come home.
Yeah.
Do you think about some of the men that you knew who were killed in action?
Yeah. I think of a lot of them. I know, remember a few names, too.
And is there any thought of, that could have been me? Or why wasn't it me?
Oh, yeah. I wasn't at that exact spot. Your luck. Yeah, your bullets fly by, you hit trees and that, you see them, but you keep on going. You're just a dumb kid.
So with that honor flight experience, what was the most meaningful part of all of it for you?
Just to see that place. It's something that you don't realize, you know, how big it is, that memorial. You got treated so well. Police car in the front, the police behind us, sirens going. 28 miles of sirens, pushing that traffic aside. Cops pushed them cars aside. I sat in the front of the bus, got a perfect seat.
Well, they only do that for really important people.
Yeah, we felt like the president. When you see the president going, well, that's just like we did.
When you think back on it, almost 95 years old now, is there something that you'd say you're most proud of or most thankful for?
To make it through, I guess. Take it as it comes, you know. I raised stock cars, 38 Ford coupe, and I had a 42 Mercury coupe. I rolled one over and rolled it over and landed on the wheels and got stayed right in the race.
Now that sounds like luck.
That was luck.
And all kidding aside with that, again, not wanting to suggest something that isn't there, but when you say that your survival in World War II, you're meeting your wife, all these things, that it amounts to luck.
Luck is all it is.
So there's no thought on your mind, hey, somebody or something was protecting me in that situation?
I think so, yes. I believe good Lord is looking after me. At the same time, I call it luck.
You just understand it could have been a lot different.
Hell yeah. I could have made a misstep somewhere.
Aren't we glad he didn't? Roger Bain, 94 years old, of Las Vegas, Nevada. Big thanks to Belinda Morse of Honor Flight Southern Nevada for connecting me to Roger. Speaking of Honor Flight, you may have heard the news that in light of the coronavirus pandemic, all Honor Flights across the country have been suspended until at least April 30th. I hope you'll remember to continue supporting those groups. There are still so many deserving veterans who have not yet had the chance that Roger had to visit their memorials in Washington, D.C. You'll find photos and a short video of Roger online at hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. But we're out of time on the radio today. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you again that freedom is not free.